Hello, everybody. Welcome to the January 2024 edition of Logistics Pulse, the audio program, which is co-produced by Logistics Plus and Armada Corporate Intelligence. Thank you again to our partners at WPSE Money Radio for recording and editing today's show. Today is Friday, January 18th, and our January Executive Supply Chain Bulletin was just published this morning, and it's available on our website. And we'll be pushing that out by email to our subscribers later this morning. But we're going to talk through that briefing, the January briefing, and see what's new in the world of supply chain. My name is Scott Frederick. I'm the CMO for Logistics Plus. And with me today is our regular guest and partner, Keith Prather, who is the Managing Director at Armada Corporate Intelligence. Keith, Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Hey, Happy New Year to you as well. Excited to kick off 2024 and see what happens, right?
yeah, for sure. It's a brand new year. Can't wait to see what it brings us.
Yeah.
You know, last month in the briefing, we brought up the fact that the Fed was projecting Q4 GDP at 1.2%. It seems they've readjusted that number now, and we're closer to almost 2.5% is what they're saying the Q4 GDP was at. So what does that mean, and what sort of growth are we seeing for the coming year, Keith?
Yeah, you know, when you look at blue chip estimates, the blue chip estimates are somewhere around 1.5%. And then, as you said, the Fed's GDP now estimate is right around 2.2, almost 2.4% as of this morning. And so as new economic data rolls in, they adjust that GDP now figure. And what we found historically is that the real GDP figure comes in somewhere between those two. So we're probably still looking at somewhere around 2% for Q4. It's still pretty good. It's pretty solid. It's good growth. You know, when we think about Q3 was almost 5%, and it was on the back of basically four pillars. And those pillars, I think we've referred to them in the past as like legs of a stool. And we had good, strong consumer spending. We had good non-residential construction activity. And we had good government investments and government spending, both federal, local, and, well, state. I guess it's three of them. But then we also had inventory building activity in Q3. And that's what pushed it to almost 5%. And then in Q4, you still get good consumer spending. We still see good non-residential construction activity, and we still have government investments in the economy. And so that's why we're probably closer to 2.2%. We didn't have as much inventory building activity as is a normal seasonal cyclical kind of thing we run into in the supply chain. But that's where we're kind of coming up with that 2.2%. So your real question is, you know, what does that mean for the rest of 2024? And what we think is going to happen is in Q1 and Q2, you know, you get a little bit of a slowdown. So we're actually expecting just some mild contraction, perhaps, in Q1 and Q2, maybe, you know, something as small as 0.25%, or, you know, maybe 0.125% in both Q1 and Q2. I mean, we almost could call it flat, Scott. It's almost like almost no declines, basically flat. And it's quarter over quarter, so it'll be flat from where we are in Q4. But for the second half of the year, then we see a little bit of acceleration. So we'll see what happens. But I think for full year 2024, all things considered, we're probably looking at somewhere around 1% growth.
Wow. Seems a little bit on the soft side. We'll see how the year goes. Despite that sort of soft prediction, at least at the moment, it seems like consumers are still doing their part to prop up the GDP, as we saw in the Q4 and perhaps going into 2024. I don't know if it shows any signs of slowing down or not. I'm looking at some of the GDP numbers on retail sales that we didn't include in the bulletin, but just looking at some segments, it looks like recently there was some strong growth, not surprisingly, on the motor vehicle and parts dealer side, clothing and accessories, general merchandise stores. Any thoughts on kind of where the consumer's at and how retail might come into play with GDP?
Yeah, so here's where we have to get into kind of the hairy side of economics, right? The big, deep, dark secrets of economics. But there's a couple different theories. I'm going to have to throw them both out there right now because I think we just have a lot of volatility. I could throw out 10 or 15 slides that would probably scare the pants off of most people when it comes to the consumer. I mean, we could show them record credit card debt with, you know, record high interest rates. We could show, you know, 60% of the population living check to check. And there's so many scary charts. But what we have learned in 2023 is that despite dire predictions about the U.S. consumer, the consumer remains resilient. And it's because we have a good, strong jobs market. We still have 8.7 million jobs open in the United States. So even when companies go through mild layoff rounds, people are very quickly finding new jobs. And many of them aren't even seeing cuts in pay. So household incomes are staying pretty steady. We have household wage growth annually of somewhere around 4.1%. And what's happening to us is that throughout 2023, we had really tough inflationary conditions. So we had wage growth of 4.1%, but we may have had inflation pressures of nearly 4%. So most households weren't really digging out. They weren't able to build any headroom of income. So you think about something as simple as going to a Walmart. They go to Walmart and they're really only able to shop one side of the store. So they're hitting the grocery side. Maybe they hit pharmaceuticals, but they're really only able to buy the basics. And then, you know, they leave with those packages. So their total dollars of spending were the same as they would have been a year ago, but they're walking out with fewer items. Now, where we're seeing wage growth still at about 4.1%, but we're seeing real inflation somewhere down in the 2.6 range, you know, almost 2.7% range. Now, all of a sudden, there's all this extra discretionary income. So consumers are going in and they're not just hitting the grocery aisle and the pharmaceutical aisle, but now they're strolling through toys and they're strolling through electronics and they're picking up books and they're looking at apparel and they're hitting, you know, the non-essential side of retail spending. And so that's why we're getting these little boosts of spending. And for now, until we see the job market change, there's no reason for us to think that consumer spending will be any different moving through 2024 than it is now. And what's fascinating is, as you talk to purchasing managers, you know, we're going to talk about inventories here in a minute, and inventories are fairly balanced, but as they look forward, they're really critically trying to forecast demand. And it's the consumer demand side of the equation, which is 70% of economic activity in the U.S., that's the critical factor that they're trying to understand going into next year, trying to figure out where to build inventories and where to invest their time and energy and their money. So for now, again, we've gotten the consumer wrong all year long. And for 2024, then, I think we flip to the other side of the equation and we say, well, the consumer is going to remain strong until, you know, we see something that tells us they're not. So unfortunately, that's kind of where we are.
Yeah, we'll continue to watch that and see how that plays into things. Last week, the Fed released its producer price indices across most sectors. And of course, we track some of those pretty closely as it relates to different transportation modes and warehousing. And of course, we publish those every month in the Logistics Pulse briefing. Where do we see pricing trending right now in those different modes?
Yeah, so what's interesting is in the Logistics Pulse report, you know, we cover at least six of those every single month. And we look domestically and then we have some global rate readings. So what's interesting is on the domestic side, you know, of course, as you would expect with the exit of Yellow out of the industry, LTL is staying fairly stable. So we see rates still growing at about a 1% annual rate, according to the Producer Price Index. And the Producer Price Index, just for background, is a survey of anywhere from 200 to 300 users of a product or service every single month. And it's usually the same users. They sign up and they agree to participate in the survey every month. So it's stable. And unfortunately, it includes both fuel surcharges and contract and spot rates. So we have a little bit of noise in the data, but generally it's a good barometer in general as sort of where things are headed. So again, should have given that background first, but LTL fairly stable, again, 1% growth year over year. Truckload is still down. Truckload prices are still, you know, down about 3% at the end of December, month over month. And then, you know, for the full year, still down almost 9%, a little over 9%. But small package, you know, parcel, still doing very well. Prices there higher about, you know, not quite 10% year over year. So we still see a lot of strength. And then we think about international, you think about international air freight prices, you would think it would be a lot further down, but in December, we saw a little bit of a lift. We were 7% higher month over month, and on a year-over-year basis, still down about 5%, but you know, obviously, there's a lot less global activity, and so you would expect some of that pressure. Warehousing prices, I'm bouncing down to that. We'll come back to maritime, but warehousing prices, fairly flat. Again, as we're going through this destocking process around the world, some warehouse demand is going down, and we see a little bit of slack capacity starting to open up. And so that's kind of what we're dealing with. And then ocean freight kind of branches over into another question we're going to have here in a little bit, and a little bit of discussion. But ocean freight prices, really tough, because in the producer price index, that survey was conducted between November and December prior to a lot of the Red Sea shutdown. And with the Red Sea shutdown, then obviously we're seeing some pretty dramatic changes in spot prices around the world. But the U.S. producer price index for maritime, you know, we're still showing it flat month over month and still down about 9% year over year. But I think that changes. I think we'll start to see some rapid acceleration or changes in those prices just as global maritime capacity gets impacted by the events in the Middle East.
Yeah, let's go down that path. You brought up a couple things there, and you mentioned also the air freight kind of prices rising there. I wonder if some of that might be some of the effects of these bottlenecks we're seeing on the ocean side of things. Again, shifting our discussion here more on the global side of things, we know we've got some bottlenecks in Panama Canal, but we're starting to see some improvements, it seems, there. But again, with this strong El Nino cycle, it's probably going to be keeping a lid on capacity, and we're going to see some bottlenecks, it looks like, in the Panama Canal for a while longer, although, again, getting a little bit more throughput there, but just not where it needs to be. Additionally, you already mentioned the situation with the Red Sea and, you know, all that chaos going on. So these factors seem to be hampering, you know, not only for impacting some of the ocean and air freight rates, but also seem to be hampering global manufacturing growth in many countries, as we saw with some of the global measures that we include in this month's briefing. And then, of course, you mentioned ocean freight rates. And in fact, in the briefing, we bring up another index. It's the Drewry chart that charts ocean freight rates. And that particular index is showing some pretty dramatic rises in prices on trade routes from Asia to Europe. So what do you think of all that, Keith?
Yeah, there's a lot in there, right? So let's break it down by region first. So let's talk Panama Canal. So it looks like the El Nino. So there's three phases of El Nino. There's a weak El Nino, there's a moderate El Nino, and then a strong El Nino. And based on water temperatures, we think, as you said, that this is going to continue to be a strong El Nino, at least through the first quarter of the year, maybe through the first half of the year. So what they're watching is the lake water levels in that freshwater lake that feeds the lock system in the Panama Canal. And it's currently in a pretty severe drought condition. And so they have to limit the amount of water that can flow through the locks. So we were processing only 15 to 18 ships a day through the Panama Canal. And the Panama Canal Authority has said that they think in January, in the first quarter, they're going to be able to increase that up to about 25 ships a day. But normal would be somewhere around 35 or 36 a day. So we're still going to be compressed and see less throughput through the Panama Canal, but it's going to feel a little bit better than it has over the last quarter or so. Again, we don't see any softening, but this is one of those things where if all of a sudden the weather pattern changes and improves and we get a lot of rain, we get a lot of water, and then suddenly that throughput will increase pretty quickly. So the Panama Canal still has that logjam. We're still using workarounds. We're either hitting Lázaro Cárdenas in Mexico and railing it north, or, you know, we're hitting the West Coast, LA Basin ports, or maybe even Vancouver and railing it across that way, depending on where it's going in the United States. But it is affecting some of the port volumes, like in Houston especially. So that's the Panama Canal. The Red Sea continues to be very complex. And even in just the last, you know, 48 hours, you've had some things change. So we've got the Red Sea and you have the Suez Canal and movement through that. And insurance rates have surged. We got another container ship hit by an anti-ship missile earlier this week, which has really completely choked off most commercial traffic through the area. Even if naval escorts were able to provide, you know, that shadow escort service through there, a lot of insurance companies, a lot of commercial companies just don't want to take the risk with crew and freight moving through that region. So in the initial days, as ships would be headed for the Red Sea and they get turned around and have to then go the long way around Africa, around the Cape of Good Hope, it added about 21 days of additional transit time. And so when you talk to supply chain managers, they're saying, hey, my transit times are still elongated, you know, 20, 21 days extra just trying to get to destination. And that's primarily going to be in Asia to Europe trade lanes. But when they actually leave Asia or India headed directly for like U.S. ports or for European ports, if they cut across through the southern route around the Cape of Good Hope and up, the real difference is about 9 days. And so supply chain managers moving forward as we place new orders are going to be building in that next 9 days of transit. And so things, I think, will settle down. I think this is a near-term issue and they stabilize as we move forward. But the third area opening up now that we're concerned about and we have to watch, and I'm hearing petroleum CEOs sound some warnings and some alarms, is in the Persian Gulf, and especially the little choke point at the Strait of Hormuz. And Iran seized a tanker there that, you know, they said was basically their oil. And so we had a little bit of an incident last week in that area, but the tensions are kind of flaring there. We now have Iran and Pakistan exchanging fire. We've got Iran exchanging fire with Syria and hitting rebel factions in Syria, sort of a reprisal for some of the attacks that happened in Iran a couple weeks ago. And so you've got firing happening all over the region. And at some point in time, that could disrupt tanker traffic coming in and out of the Persian Gulf if it continues to escalate. So we're watching that in relation to petroleum prices. We haven't seen any movement in petroleum prices yet, but we've got those issues. And then the last one we didn't really talk about much because it doesn't really affect overall global freight traffic, but it affects material availability, is flows in and out of the Black Sea. And there was an exchange between Ukraine and Russia where a Russian naval vessel was hit by a missile. And within a couple of days after that, the open corridor that flows from the ports of Odessa through the Black Sea, allowing Ukrainian shipments in and out of the country, we had a commercial tanker, basically, it was a bulk shipper full of wheat. It hit an ocean mine, and it was an ocean mine that wasn't supposed to be in that location. So they don't know if maybe that corridor was mined after that attack, or if it was just a stray mine that wasn't collected prior to, you know, the whole ceasefire through that corridor. But in any way, it's creating additional congestion in and out of the Black Sea and concern in and out of the Black Sea. So we've just got a lot of things happening, and I hate to spend too much time on it, but if there is one concern in the global economy and the global supply chain, it's going to be those issues that we just talked about.
Yeah, there was a lot there to unpack, Keith, and I appreciate you breaking it down for us. On the Drury chart that we included in this month's briefing, how does that index compare or contrast with the Fed's PPI that we track as well? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so the Drury index actually is going to be spot rates. So they're getting reports from the field, and so it's going to be more real time. They update it every week, and so you can go in and check those Drury rates. I would imagine Logistics Plus for Customers has a similar kind of measure where customers that are working with you one-on-one, you can kind of understand what those real-time spot rates are. So that's the biggest difference. The PPI is conducted by a monthly survey, and so it's going to be a little more point in time. We'll pick up, the PPI will pick up those pressures in the January wave, but the Drury report would pick it up on a weekly basis as those conditions change. So if you like averages and like 3-month moving averages, where you like to smooth things out a little bit, the PPI is probably a better measure, because the Drury index is going to be kind of the, you know, stuff just happened. Yep. And we're going to get that gut reaction real quick. And you may see 126% growth rates in a certain lane and you may panic, but, you know, a week or two later, those spot rates will be right back down where they probably should be. So that's real quick how I would distinguish them.
Appreciate the clarification there. And again, I'm sure my international team is all over it, as you mentioned. Being more of a domestic trucking guy, I was just kind of curious what the distinction there was. So thanks.
Yep, you bet.
One final topic to cover here. You mentioned it earlier in our discussion, but again, tracking those inventory to sales ratios, and it seems like on a global basis that the overstock situation is starting to fall back in line, which if demand starts picking up in 2024, we could see maybe some upstream supply chains reigniting again. Is that correct?
You nailed it. Yeah, absolutely. You and I have talked about this now in the podcast for over a year or more, and yeah, we had these inventory overstock situations coming out of the 2021 and 22 global supply chain crisis, and companies had ordered multiple from multiple suppliers, you know, hoping just one would fulfill the order. And ultimately, all three or four that they were ordering from filled those orders. And so we had these overstocks. And we've seen cycles like this before in the past. And typically, the period of time it takes to unwind that cycle, to destock and get inventories back in line, has taken us 14 to 18 months. And we're right at that. You know, I would call it easily, you know, 14 months, you know, we could be even upwards around 16 months in that cycle. And so what I'm seeing in the inventory to sales ratios is a little bit of softening. We're seeing inventories come back down. But what I'm getting in monthly reports, the PMIs, when we read the PMI reports from around the world, you're seeing that global markets are finally back in what they're calling a balanced state. So inventories are not bloated. So a brand new order for a manufactured good kind of ignites the upper end of the supply chain. And so you have orders for raw materials, energy, labor going into the manufacturing process, which just keeps that whole upper end of the supply chain fully ignited. And then obviously the downstream part of it also works as well. And so what we're seeing is at least a global rebalancing. And the way we think about it from an economic perspective is the transportation economy has been running counter to the global economy. So you and I talked about GDP earlier, and GDP in the US, you know, it could be growing 2 to 2.5, maybe 3% this year, but the freight economy was still in recession. Next year, they kind of align and they kind of come back into alignment where inventories are lean and supply chain managers are basing orders on what they see as real demand, not on just managing inventory overstocks. And so they're thinking differently as we go into 2024. And so, yeah, we could easily see the freight economy, the movement of goods, the catching up of the supply chain move maybe even ahead of GDP. So if we get 1% growth of GDP in 2024, we could see freight companies and we could see logistics firms, you know, running 2%, 3%, and 4% growth just because the supply chains now are going to go from overstocked to either balanced or understocked. And so they may kind of get into a little bit of a scramble mode if demand is a little bit better, as you mentioned. So that would be the best way to end the podcast, is just that I feel more optimistic about the freight economy in 2024 and what we're going to see. And of course, for shippers, it creates a more challenging environment because, you know, they're going to have to work a little more aggressively to see prices stay in line with where they think they should be. Otherwise, we're going to get some of these spot surges in prices across all modes, you know, when we might not have been expecting them. So.
Very good. Keith, once again, I think you covered it all. Actually, I don't think you did. I think we had a few other topics in the briefing, but we'll let folks go online and read those themselves. So let's conclude today's discussion. And I'll just remind everybody that they can visit logisticsplus.com/logisticspulse to view our January issue and to subscribe to future issues. Again, Logistics Pulse is a complimentary value-added intelligence briefing for Logistics Plus customers, partners, and prospects. Until next month, Keith, stay safe and be sure to keep your finger on the pulse of logistics.
Take care, everybody. Thanks.